what we really want to talk about. So I hope everybody enjoyed lunch. We only have at most a couple of hours left, and how long that takes is up to you. We can go up till 3. If you end a little bit earlier, that's fine. But the goal for the afternoon is to take everything that we talked about so far and try to, I don't like calling it a code of ethics. In a sense, it is a code of ethics, but codes of ethics generally are very specific. You know, you have to do this, you can't do that. And often they feel like they are a set of rules that somebody else is pressing on you. I think our attitude should be that this is, I don't even want to call it a code, but expectations for how we behave on council, expectations for how we're going to interact with one another, how we might interact with citizens, how we're going to interact maybe even with other branches of government or levels of government. So rather than thinking code of ethics, I didn't know what else to say, and I know this sounds sort of military, but rules of engagement, that is, so how do we actually successfully interact with one another? So what you have in front of you at your place, and I also can put it up on the screen, in fact I will, is a code of ethics that you all adopted. Actually, Sarah, how long ago was this written, and how long ago was it adopted?
2017.
All right, so we're already dealing with 8 years ago. Different council. I guess, Ken, you were on at the time. Dwayne was on at the time.
Were you on? I'm not sure. Well, I'm trying to think, because it was Rachel. Were you on with Rachel?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Andre may have been. It depends on how that time frame falls.
It was both Rachels.
I'm talking about Rachel Clark.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is a good chance Andre was
on. Okay. You don't know exactly when you were elected. The pain has not seared that into your brain.
Well, he stepped away for a little while, so I think that's why to him it kind of blends the like first set of times and the second set of times. There's a gap in the middle. He regained his senses, didn't run, and then lost his senses again and came back.
All right.
See
so,
how they treat me.
Friends are friends. So we're not going to start by looking at the preamble. I think we can come up with a preamble later. I want to jump right into some of these sort of planks in the platform. I did give this some thought, and I don't know how you want to start, but it seems to me that there are a few of these that are redundant and could be combined into a much simpler sort of set, you know, couple of sentences. So I think there may be some that we can combine and rewrite in order to sort of capture the spirit of what we're after. I think there are some that we can just delete because they're so redundant or irrelevant that they don't even need to be there. Now, I'll start with maybe the most controversial of those suggestions. And this is just, you don't have to agree with me. You don't even know if I actually believe it, right? Because I told you all that you could play devil's advocate today. But let me put one up on the board that potentially I think is either redundant or at least not relevant to what should be in the town of Amherst's rules of engagement for council members. Okay? And I'm sure I'm going to get pushback, and that's great. I want an argument. I want an argument. So that's great. We're going to argue. First one I want to put up there, respect and uphold the Constitution of the United States and never act in any way that would restrict individual liberties. Council members should operate from a belief that the Constitution is the roadmap for every decision that council makes. All right, my opinion, I'm just going to start with this and invite you to attack me back. Number one, it's redundant because you should have somewhere else in this document something that says I will uphold all federal, state, and local laws.
That's number one.
I know. That's what I'm saying. We get number one, which says I'm not going to break the law.
Right.
All
right.
Great. So, why do we need the second one? Second argument I would make is, I don't even understand what this means. that every time I make a decision on the local level, I'm supposed to be guided by the principles of the Constitution. So if we are going to decide whether or not to fill that pothole, or we are going to decide whether or not you need to put a fence around that parking lot, that first and foremost, no matter what should be guiding my decision is a dedication to the Constitution of the United States. Now, you have all read the Constitution. I don't know if you have or not, but let's assume you have. You've all read the Bill of Rights. I will remind you about the Ninth Amendment. Okay? Ninth Amendment of the Constitution, which was, at the time it was debated, the only way the Bill of Rights was going to pass is if the Ninth Amendment were in there. And the Ninth Amendment says, basically, don't think that everything that the rights that are listed in the Constitution is a complete list of all your rights. In other words, they were afraid that if we start listing these things out, someone's going to say, well, if it's not in the Constitution, then you don't have that right. The Ninth Amendment is explicit in saying that's not true. These are basic rights that we do believe we need to enumerate so that everybody is aware that this is like the bare minimum core that we're starting with. But there's a lot more to be said besides just what's in the Constitution. Okay? And how do we know that? Because we have federal, state, and local laws that are not in the Constitution. So, I open it up for debate.
Well, I'll jump in because I've looked at it. I agree wholeheartedly. Constitution doesn't say anything about filling potholes. And the top one takes care of it.
I would think so.
You know, so I think number one takes care of this. It's redundant, plus the point that you brought up, you know, everything based on the Constitution. Well, I go back to the parking lots are not in the Constitution. Everybody's not granted a parking lot. You know, it's not in there. Filling a pothole is not in there. Making sure that I would think, you know, if you wanted to reach it, it doesn't say anything about connecting sewer lines in the Constitution.
No, it does not.
And so, I mean, but we understand federal, state, and local laws. So, to me, it's redundant. And plus, it just says some stuff that we can't do.
Well, and I'm also afraid it's a lightning rod for some of the partisan stuff. How do you interpret the Constitution? Are you an originalist, or are you, you know? And so we're not the Supreme Court, right?
And that's like when the Second Amendment thing came up. You know, that's
So we have one opinion on the table. While you were talking, I put up here that if you like number one, and you all have it in front of you, if you can't read this far off. Uphold federal, state, local laws and never knowingly be a party to their evasion. That's number one. Okay? We can argue, number two, we don't need it because it's already subsumed under number one, and it's misleading because it basically says the first thing you should think about when you wake up in the morning as a council member is the Constitution. I think that's not staying in your lane. So we could eliminate it. But I also think that there are two other planks in this code that maybe are subsumed under number one. I'm not sure that we need, or if we do, we have to reword all this maybe into one statement, 9 and 11. 9 says, engage in no business with town government, either directly or indirectly, which is inconsistent with the conscientious performance of government duties and ensure full compliance with the Conflict of Interest Act. And 11 says, adhere to the principle that the public's business should be conducted in public view by observing and following the letter and spirit of the Freedom of Information Act using closed meetings only as authorized by the Code of Virginia. Well, 9 and 11 both delineate specific laws that number one says you're going to follow. So if number one says we're going to follow all federal, state, and local laws, guess what? The Freedom of Information Act and the statutes on conflicts of interest, Those are laws. So one question would be, if we're not sure about number two at all, and if 9 and 11 both speak to particular laws, couldn't we just revise number one and say something like, uphold federal, state, and local laws and never knowingly be evaded, or uphold federal, state, and local laws with specific awareness of the Freedom of Information Act and the Conflict of Interest Law, and never knowingly. Now as a group, we gotta figure out what we would want. So those are just two ideas out on the table. One is jettison number 2 and combine 1, 9, and 11. I got you sort of on the jettison number 2 because it's already included here.
Right, but you got. I was getting ready to say exactly what you said about 9 and 11. I was getting ready to say that.
Same thing, right? Because those are just more laws.
Yeah, and I was going to say combine them with 1.
Okay, all right.
That was.
What do other people in the room think about? I mean, there are going to be some commitments that you make. This is really a judgment call on your part. I got to follow your will. There are some things that you're going to want to value so much that you want to make an explicit special statement to say this is something special that we need to make sure everyone hears. There are other things that can be under the umbrella of upholding federal, state, and local laws. So how are you all in agreement about 2, 9, and 11? And if you are, we need to rewrite number 1 as a group. Where do you stand on it?
I agree. It's coming from the fire service. If you make a 12-page document, nobody's going to read it. So if you just boil it down to 1 page and make it very understandable and thorough but short, it's, people actually usually follow the.
So we could be more succinct. We don't need 4 statements that all basically are saying we're going to follow various laws. We need 1. Mike, how do you feel about it? Are there any of these so important that you would want to break them out into their own lines, or are you comfortable sort of putting it all together and rewriting it?
I'm just looking at number 2.
Yeah.
Individual liberties. I think, don't most of our zoning ordinances impact individual liberties?
Look, there's no question that decisions you make can have impacts on rights that are declared rights in the Constitution. But you've already pledged under number 1 you're going to follow the Constitution. So why are you... what bothers me most about this is not that you want to uphold the Constitution. You could make a comment like that. But it actually goes on to say that council members should operate from a belief that the Constitution is the roadmap for every decision that council makes. That's just patently false. The Constitution is not a roadmap for deciding which potholes to fill on what schedule. They don't inform your CIP decision. Maybe in some indirect way, we want to make sure that all of our citizens enjoy life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Great. That's, although we're mixing documents now, that's sort of a philosophical commitment, but I honestly don't think that when you guys are deliberating around the table on an issue, Sarah, help me with an example of an issue that if something were to come up, that one of you would say, well, I think that based on my interpretation of the Constitution, we should definitely do that. And then another one of you is going to say, no, based on how I understand the Constitution, I actually think we should go there. I mean, when was the last time in a debate any of you actually mentioned the Constitution?
No. There was a time.
What was the example? Or you don't want to say?
Well, it was a past action council took, and it was brought up by the constitutionality of that action.
State constitution or federal constitution?
Both.
Okay.
It related to our authority to what our charter written, the authority of 2/3 majority to expel a member. And so it came up in that context.
I think that's great. I think that's when number 1 is really important. Mm-hmm. We will act consistently with federal, state, and local laws, because the federal constitution is not going to tell you what your rules of procedure are to eject a member of council.
Right.
It's not in the federal constitution. I don't even think it's in the state constitution. Right. It might be in your charter.
It is for
it's in the charter.
Being with state officials.
Yeah, it is the state officials.
Right, but you're not one of those.
No. But it is in our charter.
Good.
It
so
was written just like the state.
It was written exactly like the state.
Right. So once it's in your charter, I would agree with you. You need to be able to say that is written into our charter, and therefore we don't have the authority to change that, right? And any charter change requires an act of in Richmond. The General Assembly has to accept that. And I was always told, by the way, because every now and then we want to adjust Lynchburg's charter, and we were told, don't go there unless it's really important, because once you open your charter up at the state level, they can mess with it any way they want, and you might not be happy with the results. So we were always very reticent to ask for a charter change. Now, in Lynchburg, we have ward representatives and at-large representatives, and those were some of the questions that were coming up. Of course, that was voting rights. That was part of a consent decree in Lynchburg, so we don't have a choice on that. So good, I agree with you. I am not arguing the Constitution is irrelevant, and I'm not arguing you should not follow it. All I'm arguing is, I don't think that's a guiding principle that you keep in your heads every time you're making a council decision. There could be special cases where it definitely is. Right. But that's number one. Maybe we need to change number one to include uphold federal, state, and local laws and respect the charter of the town. I mean,
there you go.
You know, we need to wordsmith as to what that would look like. Audrey, what are you thinking?
No, I agree. We can just implement this 2-9-11 to incorporate with number one. If we can just reword number one, because a lot in this, the other two that really don't apply to us.
All right, now I might need some help with some note takers here, but I want to start playing with wordsmithing. All right? So if you guys as a group wanting to understand that what you're putting on paper will be something that will apply to all of you and will also guide future council members when they get elected to better understand their role and their responsibilities, how would you reword number one to encompass everything that we're worried about? Think about it for a minute while I get a glass of water.
And I will split that, is it should have uphold all federal, state, and local laws, because that means you're not going to cherry pick a local
Good.
Law anyway.
Good.
So that word all needs to be put in there.
All right, that's important. Markers are all there. So one suggestion we have so far, we don't have a sentence yet, but one suggestion is that the word all is going to be an important word. I like that, right? Because otherwise, personal.
Yeah, that's why I look more in the local thing. You know, you go back to your example earlier with the habitat.
Right.
So I think that's an important word.
How about something like this?
All right, Ken's going to start us off.
Uphold all federal, state, and local laws respecting the charter of the town of Amherst and with specific attention to the rules as set forth by FOIA and the Conflict of Interest Act.
Ooh, can we write this?
We'll wait on that. All right, let's take a slide, okay?
Uphold all federal... state... and local laws.
Am I writing big enough?
Yeah. Federal, state, go ahead. And local laws. Let's reword this, adhering to the charter of the town of Amherst.
So, comma,
yes.
Adhering. Okay.
Got a comma there. To the charter of the town.
Huh?
Charter?
Yeah, charter of the town of Amherst. Whatever.
River flows by the way.
And with specific attention to abbreviate as set forth by FOIA and COIA.
Something that Mike brought up that he was very adamant about that was in number two.
Yeah.
And we can put at the end, I mean, this is just my suggestion, with respect, let me see here, all the while respecting the individual rights of our citizens.
Ah, okay. So not a specific reference to the Constitution, but definitely a reference to the spirit.
Correct.
Of individual rights.
Yes.
Well, let's put it up there and see what everybody thinks about it. So say that again.
It's all the while respecting the individual liberty. Did I say liberties or rights?
Rights.
Liberties.
Okay, liberties.
Of our citizens. I don't remember which one I said.
I think you said rights.
Oh, I said rights. Okay.
I think you did.
Put rights back up there. It flows better with rights.
Rather than liberty.
This is going to be my racer.
Okay.
And it's
rights. Mm-hmm. All right. What are responses? So between Ken and Dwayne, we have a suggestion. This is not the final version. We all need to respond. Sarah.
I have a question for counsel as to whether you hold FOIA and COIA particularly high enough that they should be mentioned individually as opposed to other laws.
Question.
I mean, I know that they're mentioned specifically in the current code. You also will later have another, one of the bullets talk specifically about communication and transparency and mentions FOIA again. So you're going to bring this back up about how you communicate. So my question is in regard to laws, is there a reason you want to particularly enumerate those other than the fact that you currently do?
Where are we talking about it later on?
I believe it's number 12.
12.
Or 13. 13. 13 has, again, talks about communicating and then mentions FOIA.
Well, if we went down to 13 and included FOIA and COIA, yeah, that would take care of it.
So 13, which will come up later, we're going to have to spend some time on what it means to communicate fairly and equally. But quite frankly, I think there are two different concepts hiding in here. I think the first half of this statement speaks to how you're going to communicate amongst yourselves and with respect and so on. So that's an inward-facing question. How do we behave with each other in terms of how we share information, transmit information, etc.? Then there's the second issue, which is outward-facing. How do we communicate to the outside world? And I think Sarah's point is this, well, if FOIA is mentioned anywhere, that's your outward-facing obligation. You're not going to need it here again.
I think the reason it was put in there was because, you know, if three of us council members sit down and start discussing at dinner or something and start discussing town business, you got to be aware of the Freedom of Information Act.
Absolutely.
Which makes it a bit meaty.
So then the question is going to be, I think that's definitely why it's there. I'm agreeing with Sarah, though. I think these are two different concepts. So let's just get FOIA broken out. Then the question is, does FOIA, well, both Freedom of Information Act and Conflicts of Interest Act, do these belong in a general statement about I'm upholding all the laws of, you know, federal, state, and local laws? I mean, we can leave all the other language. Uphold all federal, state, and local laws adhering to the charter of the town of Amherst, all while respecting the individual rights of our citizens. That could be a statement. The question is, do you need, it's a question, it's not an answer, do you need a separate statement because FOIA and COIA so specifically apply to council business, do you want a second statement that says, council members shall be specifically aware of their legal requirements under FOIA and COIA? Or do you think that it just fits under, we're going to follow all laws?
Well, I don't want to take over, but I think it should come down. I mean, I think that should be like a number two.
Come off of number one?
Yeah, come off of number one, because I think number one sets what we're doing right then and there. As a town, as a council, it's setting that. And then when we add the others, like that one, we add it. It's in the list. It's not in like, because when you do stuff like this, number one usually catches most people's attention.
And number one is going to be, we're going to uphold laws and respect the rights of our citizens. That's sort of like big picture.
Right.
And then you're saying...
Yeah, because then everybody reads 16.
Well, we can decide later actually what order these go in. But the argument, or the question would be, since FOIA and COIA apply to you specifically as elected officials, that might feel a little different than just, of course we're not going to break the law. I mean, this means don't steal, right? So we're committing ourselves to being lawful in our work. Great, wonderful first position. Is this specific enough to what you do as council members that you want to break it out into a new number two that says, and given our positions as elected officials, we are especially aware of our duties under FOIA and COIA?
I think it's not necessarily necessary, but it is a good thing if we decide to do it, so I think it's an option that we just decide what we want
to
do.
I think we need to highlight the fact that we are going to adhere to the principles of FOIA and COIA.
But isn't it already
explicitly
covered?
Yes.
So that everybody hears that loud and clear.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's already covered though, isn't it?
So we just took it out.
Well, it is. It is. But a citizen, think about how a citizen's gonna read this, right? A citizen might say, well, you've said you're gonna uphold all the laws. That's great. Your average citizen doesn't even know what FOIA is.
Right.
Right? Because they've never had to interact with it. They're not a public body, they don't, right? So they don't even know. I mean, when I got on council, we got briefed on these laws. And for a lot of people, it was like, ooh, like, you mean three of us can't ever be together? And we had to say, well, no. It means three of you can't be together and talk about anything that has to do with city business. So we had to get briefed on that. Your average citizen doesn't need to know that. So I think Ken's position is, maybe it's not necessary to put it in a separate thing, but if you really want to bring attention to the fact that as council members, we are acutely aware of our special duties under FOIA and COIA, things that don't attach to anyone else in our locality, you could put it in a number two. Sarah?
So I want to pull back what the vice mayor brought up kind of earlier with kind of what you brought up with number 13 and point out the fact of this idea of how having a principle about how you communicate with each other as one of them, and having a principle about how you communicate with the rest of the world is another. Because I think that, as Mr. Watts has said, FOIA and COIA are fundamental to how you try to work, but also, as the vice mayor said, we want to think about how we can engage with people in a way that is meaningful to the town. So it should be even a broader thing. You know, so
yeah.
The town council seeks to engage with its citizenry in ways that are both legal according to FOIA and COIA and meaningful to those that are governed by the town. And that's not a very elegant way to put it, but that's what you're trying to get at, is this idea of there is a legal obligation and a moral and ethical obligation to outreach and engage with them in ways that are meaningful to them. And that's been kind of a theme.
To give a specific example, or to put some meat on those bones, which it's not going to be a specific enough example, but suppose Jared has some information about some issue that's come up. There's some decision that's going to be made. Jared goes off to the neighborhood, meets with the neighbors, and maybe formulates an opinion, but definitely has information that you've garnered from the public. You then tell Sarah, I'm going to bring this up at the next meeting, okay? Don't tell anybody, okay? Because I want to catch them, right? Catch them off guard. This is my political, I'm not saying that you're that kind of person, but it's your political ploy to win the argument. Sarah very much, now FOIA has nothing to do with this, right? Or it could be that Jared calls Mike and says, hey man, let's strategize about how we're gonna get this thing passed on council. They can have that conversation. FOIA has nothing to say about it. It's just two of them. Sarah probably has a rule. I don't know this, but I'm going to assume, because I think she's a good person, that Sarah probably has a rule that says, if I have information for one council member, all council members get it. I'm not going to selectively share information. So when Jared goes to Sarah and says, this is what's happening in the neighborhood, I want you to put it on the agenda, Sarah would have, I would argue, a moral responsibility, not a legal responsibility, a moral responsibility based on her role as the city manager to notify all of council all the information that Sarah has about that issue. So that's an example where how we manage the flow of information is very important, but it has nothing to do with FOIA. So FOIA is the base minimum about how we interact, right, with information in the world. I think we can either leave it here, or I think I like the idea maybe of leaving number one a little bit more oomphy, putting FOIA and COIA in its own area because it's a special obligation that applies to you. You know it's part of upholding federal, state, and local laws, but your constituents might not. So it might be worth saying, number two, recognizing our unique roles, our special roles as elected officials, we are always conscious of our duties under FOIA and COIA. Something, okay? We'll come up with the words in it. We'll put that down here. And then, under 13, when we get to it, we're going to revise this to take FOIA out, and we're going to make some sort of comment about what we expect in terms of intra-council communication. Is that where you want to go?
I think we ought to break that COIA and FOIA separately.
All right, so let's make a line, and then we're going to start sticking these on the wall, I guess.
Now, who is this written to? Amherst Town Council Code of Ethics? Is it written totally for the council or for the council and the people of the town?
This is written for you. However, it is also a public document that will communicate to the citizens what they can expect from you. Okay? So it is fundamentally your document that you need to live under. That's why we have to really go through it step by step to make sure you're comfortable with it. You adopt it as your sort of internal guidance as to how you're going to interact with one another. That's its primary function. But there is the secondary function that, if you all agree to that, you can all be held accountable to it. Which means not only can you hold each other accountable to it, but the citizenry can also say, what the hell was Andre doing in that meeting? I mean, look at their code of ethics. And he was bad now that everybody up and down. I don't think he's acting consistently with what he himself wrote. At which point, in the next election, people might say, I can't trust him on council if he won't even follow his own rules. So there is a secondary value of communicating to the public your understanding of what, of how you should behave.
And with that said, it definitely should be included.
Okay, that we want to emphasize. So the public understands that we understand. Okay, so what should we actually write for a new number two?
Do y'all agree or no?
It needs to be separate from number one in a new section.
Right.
Whether it's two or
right, just another one. Yeah,
but
yeah, it needs to be later. But we'll probably group them, like the legalistic ones will be right in a row, and then the
And short because we don't have much room.
Anyone want to take a stab at a first bit of wording around FOIA and COIA?
What was that thing you said at first?
I think what I said was something like recognizing our, I don't know if you want to say unique, but our special.
Yeah,
recognizing our special role as elected officials, we are always cognizant of the requirements under FOIA and COIA, something along.
I realize we're bound by the...
We are committed to,
I like it. We are committed to satisfying our duties under FOIA and COIA.
The recognizing part and then the...
Recognizing, or even, we can even like make it stronger, get rid of R and ING and just recommit to.
Oh, that, we're gonna have to think about all the wording there, because we may change them to action statements.
Right, a lot of action statements.
Yeah, okay.
Just commit to, anyway.
Well, number one says uphold, so it would be easy to say we uphold and we are committed.
Yeah.
To satisfying our special obligations under FOIA and COIA. Okay.
All right. Start over.
We are committed.
I think I spelled that wrong, but okay. Committed.
Committed. Oh, wait a minute, I got a brain fit here.
We are committed to,
our responsibilities.
Upholding our duties, responsibilities, obligations.
We commit to upholding FOIA and COIA.
Well, we're starting with action.
Okay. Oh, you're starting with action.
Yeah, we're doing it. We uphold, we are committed.
We are committed to uphold.
Upholding our special obligations. Under FOIA and COIA. And FOIA and COIA, Sarah, these are technically Virginia FOIA and COIA laws. So do we want to say that, or does it not matter? We just reference the Freedom of Information Act.
I think we just reference it. We can put a little footnote if we feel the need to.
We are committed to upholding our special obligations under FOIA and COIA. That's why I'm having you do it, because I don't want to embarrass myself. Yeah, I think there are two S, two T's. Something's missing. You want more?
Something's missing. We are committed to upholding
our special obligations.
Who is I?
Oh, our special obligations as elected officials.
Yes, that's, yeah, something, because it's missing.
Okay, all right. Our special obligations as elected officials. Our special obligations as elected officials. Yeah.
And do y'all want to say something about engaging the citizens, so about going beyond FOIA and COIA?
We can do that. We can hold that thought.
Okay.
Let's work through what's already on the paper, and then the question will be, what's not on the paper that we feel like we might need to add? So make a note of that so we don't forget it. But let's put it, we'll put it off just for a minute.
You don't like it? No, I like it with that added. That filled in the hole that I thought something was missing. As elected officials, took care of that.
We are committed to upholding our special obligations as elected officials under FOIA and COIA.
Yes.
Any objections? Now, we can go back and massage language, but let's keep moving. So number one, we aren't going to break any laws, right? Number two, we recognize that there are some special laws that apply to us because we're elected officials, and so we're extra careful about those. If we have this as a one and a two, we've taken care of the previous number two.
Right.
We've taken care of the previous numbers 1, 9, and 11. Ooh, we're simplifying. We just replaced four with two. And they're short and sweet, which I like. Yeah. All right. Let's keep looking. And we can go through this more than once, right? We'll make a pass. Then we'll come back and we'll make a second pass, make sure we haven't missed anything. If we look at number three, let's go back. Put loyalty to the town as a whole above loyalty to individuals or particular groups. I understand what you want to say here. And I think we need to retain the concept. Not sure I like the wording. That you would put loyalty to town as a whole above loyalty to, I think the spirit of this is something about no preferential treatment, treating people with respect and treating people equally or at least equitably. So I think we need to clean that up a little bit, and I wonder if it becomes maybe redundant with 7. So 7 says, ensure the integrity of the actions of the town council by avoiding discrimination through the dispensing of special favors or unfair privileges to anyone, whether for remuneration or not. A member should never accept for himself or herself or for family members favors or benefits under circumstances that might be construed by reasonable persons as influencing the performance of governmental duties. My worry about number 7 is that the second half is now redundant with what we just said about FOIA and COIA, so we don't need it. And the first half is talking about basically treating people fairly and not dispensing special favors or anything else, which I think was the spirit of number 3.
The first half, 7 replaces 3.
Yes. One way or the other, it seems to me that what you were looking for here was some statement about how, I mean, conflicts of interest we got as outright conflicts of interest. I think this has to do more with recognizing your duty to serve all of the citizens of Amherst fairly and with respect. Something along those lines. No preferential treatment. Yeah, go ahead.
And not just your, what you consider your people, your country.
Good, yeah, good. Yeah, that you're here. Yeah. That you're here to take the big overarching view now that you got elected. Your job is to advance the interests of the town, not to advance personal, sectarian, that's not the right word, but you're not here to drive individual agendas. You're here to advance the agenda of the entire town. Now, how can we say that? If we have number 3, and as I pointed out, potentially at least the first half number 7, no discrimination, no dispensing of special favors, no unfair privileges to anyone. Okay?
That pretty much says what 3 says, that part right there.
So what wording do you, I mean, do you think 7, the first part of 7 is the right wording and we don't need 3, or do you think that we just want to start over with brand new words that capture all of it?
Here? The first half of 7, but I don't know if the, whether for remediation or not.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary.
Because it's avoiding, you know, all types of favors and discrimination.
So do we want to just have a statement that says, as council members, I mean, we'll have to put in an action language to make Sarah happy, but, you know, we are committed to treating...
On focus on the entirety of the town's interest rather than individual or group interests.
Amen. That's good.
There you go.
That's good.
All right, let's put it on the board and then see if we can attack it.
We will.
Focus on the entirety.
Yeah, we will. We're all action language. Sarah's action.
I feel like Dr. Gillette learns a lot about us in a very short period of time when he does these exercises. He puts his professorial hat on and learns things.
The actions
of the family. Hope is not too professorial.
Focus on the entirety of the town's interests rather than individual or specific group interests.
Mm-hmm. You know what?
Rather than
specific groups or individual interests.
Now I'm worried about number 6.
have that in number one?
I think it could be in number one, and I think it might also now be in whatever we're crafting here, is that, that we don't play favorites, we don't discriminate. And then you have yet another one that is an explicit non-discrimination statement, and it lays out a variety of protected classes. So maybe 6, 7, and 3 somehow need to get pulled together. So what Sarah has suggested is we will focus on the entirety of the town's interests rather than specific groups or individual interests. There's one thing that worries me about this. There are times when we're advancing the interests of a specific group or individual. And it has no impact on overall town business. I just want to make sure that what we're not saying is we never listen to individuals or groups. I think the spirit of this is we do listen to individuals and groups, but when we make decisions, we fit that into the broader needs of the entire community. So I just want to make sure that that's communicated. Right? But I don't want anyone to read this and think, well, he won't listen to me because I'm just an individual.
So why don't we take, if we leave that in there, on this one you just put up, start with recognize, and put recognizing the needs of all citizens of race, that we throw that in there, so that makes it encompass that.
The first one. Okay, good. I like that idea. What about any language about special favors or unfair privileges? Do we want to say something like, recognize the needs of all citizens regardless of blah, blah, blah,
right,
by focusing on the needs of the overarching needs of the community without any blah, 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 without providing any special favors or unfair privileges?
Anyway.
That's going to be a lot of words.
How about we recognize the needs of all citizens by making decisions based upon the town as a whole rather than individuals or groups?
I like it. I would add, if you will take a friendly amendment.
I always.
Last sentence, read it again, just that last phrase.
Rather than individuals or groups.
How about changing, rather than giving special favors or unfair privileges to any single individual or group?
Yeah, I think that's important. More like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
All right, so let's start.
Want to start over? Want me to mark that out and start over?
Well, put a line here and then, yeah, let's start over and then we'll see, because I'm not sure how much we're going to borrow
right
from that. So where did we start? We started with, we recognize the needs of all citizens . How do you all feel about building into your own internal guidance specific protected classes?
You just say all protected or something, a broader,
or just say all citizens, period.
I was going to say, is it about protected classes or just about,
I mean, remember, this is not a legal document. It's not your advertisement for employment. I mean, you should have all of your non-discrimination clauses written somewhere. Does that need to be in your document that governs how you?
No, all citizens covers it all.
Okay, so adopt policies. No, I'm sorry. Recognize the needs of all citizens.
Should we put of the town of Amherst?
Well, that's going to come up by focusing on the entirety of the town's interests.
Okay.
So we recognize the needs of all citizens. Maybe this is where we say, without dispensing special favors or unfair privileges to any particular individual or group, while focusing on the entirety of the town's interests, period. Let's write it and see how it looks. Yeah, we gotta get it on paper so we can attack it.
To recognize the needs of all citizens,
we recognize the needs of all citizens, comma, avoiding discrimination through the dispensing of special favors or unfair privileges. This is coming out of number 7. Avoiding discrimination through the dispensing of special favors or unfair privileges. Privileges, yeah, comma. Do we want to say while focusing on the entirety of the town's interests, or
making decisions based upon the town as a whole?
Well, we're making decisions based on the entirety of the town's interests. Based on. Smith this further. We're getting the skeleton put together, right? I mean, these words could be good and we might just stick with them, but we're getting smaller and smaller.
I'm sorry. Sarah asked me one time how I would improve, what I needed to improve upon.
Write bigger?
Handwriting.
Oh, and here we have you.
That's
what I told you. Is that the best you could
do? I told you.
All right. So cross that.
Use the type.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm used to type, but not really.
So now we have replaced 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 with 3. All right, we're making progress.
Right.
Well, I don't, just skipping your thing for a second.
Yeah.
If anybody's looking at 12, it makes no sense. Some of y'all think different.
Let's look at 12. I think 12 avoid involvement or the perception thereof in matters that, when completed, come before the town council for resolution or approval. I agree with you. I think I understand what you want here, and I think it's a good idea, but I don't think that really communicates it very well.
Yeah, to me, just reading it doesn't make any sense.
I don't have a clue what it's saying.
I think the way I interpret it is, once council makes a decision, don't go meddling and trying to screw with it, right? Like, council acted, it's time for you to back off. You don't have any power anymore, you cast your vote, you're done. Is that the way, Dwayne, that you see it?
That's the way I see it, but it's not communicating well at all.
Something far better would probably be, and I'm just putting words out there, you guys wordsmith it. Sarah's already going to be typing, I'm sure. Understand your role as a single member of a larger body and respect the actions of council once they are completed.
I think your last part is good. The first part needs
okay.
to tinker.
So something about respecting the will of council as a body.
Right.
Okay. So you're one vote. I know you don't vote unless you have to break a tie, but you're basically one vote among 6, right? I mean, you're a tiebreaker, so that's a little bit different, but they're all one vote out of 5. You don't have any more power than one vote out of 5. So you need to recognize that you do have a responsibility to cast your vote the way you want, but then you also have to accept the will of council. Once council is acting, you can't disparage council, you can't try to short-circuit the effort that council has now decided on, right? So it has something to do with respecting the will of the body. Who can put some words on that?
Well, you can respect the will of the body, but not agree with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It goes back to the old thing that, you and I talked about, and Andre, it ain't personal. When you walk out the door, you're done.
Right.
It ain't personal.
And it's more than that, though. I think that that's a piece of it, and we have to make sure that that somehow gets into this document, the way you're going to interact with another, with each other. But it's also, I think, saying you got to drop your bone. Like, you can chew on that bone all day long, but council's already dealt with it. So, you can't frustrate the will of council. If council voted to do X, you don't leave the meeting and actively try to frustrate X. You don't rile up your constituents. You don't, right? You don't intentionally break the will of council. You have to respect the process, right? Council came to a decision. I don't have to like it. I don't have to agree with it. I can even continue to say in public, I voted against that, but I respect the will of the body. How do we say that?
I guess one of my questions for council would be, do you want to be very specific about this? Because you don't have codified anywhere in your rules of procedure the 1 year. That has been your practice. We have worked that way for many years. Do you want to be super specific about this and say something like, respect the will of council as a body by accepting the decisions of council as decided for at least 1 year? So in other words, the thing decided, there's a time period with which, and you put it in here, that this is part of how we work. We accept that decision for a year before we're going to bring it back up. Or do you want to make it more broad and principle-based, respect the will of council by, you know, I don't, something broad about working together? You know.
Or in between. I respect the will of council, and I will honor the rules of procedure. See, I don't want to say in this document, wait 1 year before you bring it up again. I have two problems with that. Number one, we don't want to rewrite rules of procedure in this document. This document is meant to be more of a sort of a philosophical guidance. So I don't want to get in the weeds. That's the same reason why I didn't want to get into quoting chapter and verse, FOIA and COIA and all the rest of it. Reference it, but it lives somewhere else. So number one, I don't know if I would say 1 year.
Okay.
Number two, I don't want people to think that once a vote is cast, you're not allowed to talk about it for a year. If a constituent stops you at the store and says, hey, what happened? I thought you were in favor of this. You have every right in the world to say, well, I was in favor of it, and I brought it to council, but I couldn't get the necessary votes, so unfortunately it failed. That's a fair thing for you to say as an elected official. That's not disrespectful of the process. The disrespectful of the process would be, those idiots on council don't know what they're doing, and I'm going to, I don't know, call my state senator or get someone impeached or you know, whatever it might be. But you certainly should be able to talk about it, right? And if you're running for office again, you should even be able to run on it. This is how I voted, this is how they voted. So could we find a middle ground? Instead of saying for at least 1 year, how about if we replace that with, and I will respect the rules of, do you have rules of procedure?
We do. I suspect we should add the 1 year thing. If council is supportive of that, we should codify it.
That's not in your rules of procedure?
It's a practice, but it has never been codified in the rules of procedure.
And everybody's just abiding by it.
Well, all the more reason why you can't put it in this document.
That would be writing, though.
Huh?
I we ought to put it in writing somewhere.
I think that when I bring this to you, I'm going to bring you your rules of procedure and include that in it so that y'all can decide whether you want to include it as part of your rules of procedure or not, and let you have that debate and decide what you want to do with that.
In Lynchburg, it was definitely included in our rules of procedure as to how often an issue could be brought up if it had already been acted upon.
What was the time period in Lynchburg?
I think it was a year. And I think your habit is a reasonable is a reasonable habit, but apparently I thought you had already written it down somewhere.
It had just been, it's just, when I came on as mayor, I was told that's the way, and that was 8 years ago, that's the way it is.
Yes, that's, so, that allows, now Jared can come in and say, show me where that's written. I didn't run to keep my mouth shut for a year, and you show me where I'm violating any rules of procedure by bringing this up every single month. I mean, you'd have the authority to do that. So your rules of procedure do need to be tightened up.
Agreed.
Also about how you manage debate. I don't know if you have in your rules of procedure that you as the mayor, is there anything about how long an issue has to be debated before someone can call the question? I mean, you guys are way too small to be using Robert's Rules of Order, big book, to guide, right? You should have a much simpler set of rules of procedure. And then if they don't speak to something, you can always say, in areas where this isn't discussed, we refer to Robert's Rules of Order. But Sarah, did you ever get from Walter an example of the Lynchburg Rules of Procedure? Because they're short, well, short. I mean, they're pages long, but a hell of a lot shorter than Robert's Rules of Order and designed for small bodies. Mm-hmm. And it says things like, you can't call the question unless debate has continued for at least 30 minutes. And everyone who wants to speak has been given an opportunity.
Well, the one thing we do, everybody that wants to speak is given plenty of opportunities to speak.
Right.
That goes in, and what I do is I call on everybody, and then is it anybody else?
Right.
In discussion, you know, and I let everybody discuss. I mean,
but if an argument's been going on for an hour, and everybody's had a chance to talk, and you're just running in circles, there could be a point at which one of you all says, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to call the question, which, by the way, becomes a substitute motion, and it stops debate on all other motions, and so you would have to act on it right then and there. And calling the question, at least according to our rules of procedure, required, number one, that everybody who wanted to speak had a chance to do it, and number two, that discussion had continued for at least 30 minutes. So what you could not do is have everyone make a quick opening statement, and then someone quickly say, call the question. No more debate. Let's get this over with. No, slow down. Slow down.
Most of our debates last a few minutes. Everybody gets their say, and I don't think any of them
go over
30 minutes.
No, and if it's an argument,
you might not need a 30-minute.
Right. If there's an argument, I'll let go for a minute and I'll shut it down. If they're just getting to where they're just arguing.
But we have to be able to put on paper, you're not going to be the mayor forever. I'm sorry. You're not going to be the mayor forever, and we don't write policy for the incumbent. You might handle that gavel beautifully, but the next mayor might really start to abuse that privilege, deciding who gets called on in what order, and you had a longer time to talk, and you had less time to talk, but everybody did open their mouth, so I'm calling the question. So we need rules, not for you, we need rules for the office of the mayor, who holds the gavel. Well, and actually, for all of you. So let's get back to where we were. The spirit we're working on now is, which one?
Well, 12.
Oh, 12. Avoid involvement or the perception thereof in matters that, when completed, come before the town council for resolution or approval. Can we put it in more positive language?
Yeah.
Accept the will of council after appropriate procedures have been followed to debate the issue, or respect the process. I mean, Sarah, what have you got?
So far, it's just respect the will of council as a body by accepting the decision of council and by following the rules of procedure.
I think 12 as it's written is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's hard to understand exactly what it means. All right, can you write that?
Respect.
Well,
that
what she said.
Respecting, I think, is how she started.
I said respect the will of council as a body. By accepting the decisions of council and following the rules of procedure. And following the rules of procedure.
Now, that, once you have ironed out your rules of procedure,
right,
actually gives the mayor a very specific standing to call someone out of order. Right? You've already spoken and you're interrupting your councilmate, that violates our rules of order, or you're campaigning from the dais, not allowed to do that, or you're being disrespectful to the citizen who's speaking before us. So we have to put in rules of procedure that we don't use offensive and disparaging language, that we respect each other's right to speak to any issue before we speak a second. I mean, you'll iron that all out. This is, you can invite me back and we can just do a whole session on rules of procedure. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, quick question.
Sure, go for it.
Because I was attacked on this. When you're down or something, I have stuff in for you.
Right.
And I'm conducting the meeting, and I was attacked because first I allowed someone in the audience speak, but I did that because it was on point with the conversation. And then I was also attacked for not getting orders from the council members. The council members just speaking when they want, but everybody was in order. It was no problem. So everything was going smooth, right? I thought, so how does it go? Do a council member have to be recognized? And Sarah told me I could allow someone to talk, even though they might not have been on the list. It's later in the meeting. If they had a good point and was on point with what we're discussing. So what's your feelings on it?
If you've got, I don't understand your context of the last part. The first part, because you told me, you said, I know you've done it before, man.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's if they're going to speak to just a point. I don't want to comment. I don't want to, but if I know what they're going to say, sometimes, not all the time, I have let them go ahead and say what they're going to say.
Now, on for the council members, do we have to be, I'd like to be recognized by you for what I talk, but what, is that the rule?
Well, I recognize, I'm trying to get fairness in there. That's why I started recognizing each council member. And then it's still some discussion. After everybody said what they said, then you can go, you know, if you want to address something that Kenneth said, you know. But Mr. Watts, I don't get this or don't understand it. He can explain it back. Yeah. I mean, until you get to yelling at each other, then I'm going to shut you up.
Okay.
But yeah. Other than that, you know, you know, I'll say, you know, what I just said. You know, other than that, that's more discussion. I mean, that's okay. You know,
and I do have to say that holding the gavel, it does give you a lot of power. It's informal power, but you have power. And you have to use it wisely. So there's no hard and fast, like, don't open your mouth until the mayor has explicitly said, I hereby recognize so-and-so. The mayor might decide, especially you're a small body. That's why Robert's Rules of Order doesn't apply to you, right? You're a small body. You can get conversational, especially if it's in a work session as opposed to a formal council meeting. You might really want to encourage a back and forth. So you, as the mayor, might say, hey, Ken, did you hear what Andre just said? Well, how do you respond to that? And then, oh, wait a minute, Mike, are you in with this, or do you agree with Jared on this thing? You can handle the conversation that way, but then there will come times when things get heated, and he's going to have to say, that motion's not on the table. In other words, we're arguing about whether or not to give a zoning waiver for a fence, and then you start talking about the Applebee's. And the mayor would have every right in the world to say, I'm sorry, sir, you're out of order. That's not the issue we're discussing. Bang. And then you should shut up.
But he does that.
I know he does that.
I've seen him do that.
I'm sure he does. But yeah. The point is, there is an art to running a meeting which you cannot encapsulate entirely in the rules of procedure. The rules of procedure will be a tool by which, when things start getting out of hand, you can say, hey, guys, we got to rein this in. Let's follow these rules of procedure. By the way, I will tell you that rules of procedure, one of the rules of procedure is that with a majority vote, council can suspend the rules of procedure at any moment. So if you guys are having a wild debate and you've decided, this is productive, I think we're going to let this go on for a little while, you could entertain a motion to suspend the rules of procedure and allow for a much more free-flowing conversation. You could say,
we don't have a time, so I just...
But you could add it. You could say, for the next 20 minutes, we're just going to let things roll. So can we suspend the rules of procedure for the next 20 minutes and let you all just have an open conversation? And then you'll gavel it back down and say, okay, guys, we did that. Now it's time to move forward. So the rules of procedure are there, but you can override them as a body. We used to get that advice from Walter Irwin, the city attorney, all the time. The rules of procedure, there is a guide, but they're your rules of procedure, which means you can change them if you don't like them, and you can even suspend them if at one point you want to do something that's outside of the rules of procedure. But when you suspend them, you shouldn't just jettison them. You should say, do we all agree that for whatever, for the next 20 minutes, you know, you're just going to have an argument. If it's healthy, then you should do it.
We have to have a motion and second.
You would. To in order to overrule your rules of procedure, you'd have to have a majority vote of council.
You see, for that, we never have had a time limit for y'all discussion. Unless it got just totally redundant, it, you say the same thing, Kenneth's saying the same. And we sit here for 15 minutes, and it's been the exact same thing. You know, I'll shut it down. Right. Because it's not being productive.
Right.
But we, knock on wood, it may happen this month, but we haven't had that.
No, but that's probably because you do a pretty good job handling the gavel. But I think that the rules of procedure should back you up in that. In other words, we have to know where you get the authority to shut down the conversation. And so does that mean everyone's had a chance to speak and at least a period of time has gone by? Does that mean that in your judgment, the argument's becoming redundant? I mean, that'd be a weird thing to put into rules of procedure, that if the mayor believes you're being redundant, then he doesn't have to recognize you. I mean, that would be a sort of an odd procedure, right? It would be much better to have something more formal that says, if everyone has had a chance to talk, and I put a time limit on it. Maybe you don't. Maybe you just say, if everyone has had a chance to talk at least once, then you could entertain a motion to call the question. See, I think that's too strict, because sometimes people want to talk more than once, and especially if a counter argument comes up, they want to respond to that. You have to allow the give and take.
But Robert's rules give us that option.
They
after
do.
Everyone has spoken, we can speak again if we get directions.
Absolutely,
from the
you
mayor.
Can. Yes. Robert's rules is great. But do you have a parliamentarian who's going to read all of Robert's rules of order? And then do you want each other using Robert's rules of order, weaponizing Robert's rules of order? I mean, the first thing you should do, good example. A motion to reconsider under Robert's Rules of Order can only be made by someone on the losing side of the vote. Okay? So suppose some big decision is being made, and you know that it's going to pass, and you want to make sure it doesn't ever come up again. Okay? You vote against it, even though you're in favor of it, knowing that it'll carry anyway. That puts you on the losing end of the vote, which means as soon as that vote is over, you can say to the mayor, Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to reconsider. I want to vote again on exactly what we just voted on 5 minutes ago. I want to do it again. Because you're only allowed one vote of reconsideration. So this would preempt anyone who really was on the losing side of the debate for bringing it back next month and saying, I think we went too fast on that. I want to reconsider it. You can bring anything back on the table with a vote to reconsider. But the motion has to be made by someone who's losing. So now, if you really know Robert's Rules of Order, you can play this game, right? It's like being a hotshot attorney, and you know all the loopholes. You don't want that in local government, right? So you should have a rule of procedure that explicitly says something like, once an issue has been resolved, it can't come back for a year. Maybe you want to say it can't come back for a year without the approval of a supermajority of council.
You're doing great, Bert. I hope you're not creating a monster.
I'm trying to tame the monster, right? Robert's rules of order can be a monster. A shorter rules of procedure. I mean, frankly, you need an escape hatch for the 1 year. Because what if you voted for something and then new information came and you found out this is really bad for the city? You don't want to be hamstrung not being able to change the position. So what you might want to build in there is it can't come back for a year unless a majority of council votes to bring it back, or a super majority of council votes to bring it back. I mean, you have options there. All right, so we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, and that takes care of everything else that's on the wall right now. Let me just jump ahead, I'm looking at time. Let me jump ahead and share with you two more that I think maybe you don't need anymore. But you tell me if I'm wrong about that. Four and 16. Dedicate sincere effort and service to the position of trust for which stewardship has been granted, giving an earnest action and best thought to the performance of duties in an ethical manner. And 16. Pledge to honor and uphold these principles, ever conscious that public office is a public trust. Very nice sentiments. But you know what? That's your preamble. Right? That's the paragraph that comes before any rules. Okay? So, we pledge to honor and uphold the public trust. And we're going to work hard. I mean, is that really a code of ethics? I'm going to work hard? I think that's a background assumption. So I think if we look at the preamble, why are we even creating this document? We could in the preamble say something like, we recognize the honor, the privilege that it is to be in public office, the guardians of public trust. And in order to act as good stewards of the public trust and public resources, we adopt this. These just seem to me to be powerful ideas but weak rules. I don't know how you determine whether or not someone has failed to work hard. What do you think?
Can you repeat your suggested preamble?
Oh, thank you, sure. I have the tape recorder going, but something like, I mean, you could just say.
I have what you started with. You started with, we recognize the honor and privilege of public office, and then I have an order to steward, and then I kind of lost where you were.
Well, so we, read what you have again so far.
We recognize the honor and privilege of public office.
And I would then go on to say that we commit ourselves to upholding the public trust in our work as responsible stewards of, fill in the blank, I don't know the right word.
I would just say for the town of Vermont.
Adopt these principles of action. In other words, this all becomes preamble. Whoops. I would just like, the reason I'm saying this is everything else that we've said, I can accuse you of violating FOIA, and you can do an investigation to figure out whether or not it's true. So I can demonstrate you either did or did not satisfy this expectation of behavior. How am I supposed to test whether you've been honorable and worked hard? What's the bar? Right. So I think that this is more a question of your own conscience, right? Which makes the preamble. Because of the awesome responsibility that you have been granted as elected officials, recognizing your duty to be a good steward of public resources, you hereby adopt these principles of action. I liked what I just said. Too bad I didn't write that down.
I have down, we recognize the honor and privilege of public office, and we commit ourselves to upholding the public trust in our work as responsible stewards of our home, the town of Amherst, and hereby adopt these principles.
Ooh, that's why we love her.
Yeah, she's great. I wish you had a printer. Let's not make you write all that.
Okay.
Are we at least in agreement that we could take 4 and 16 out of the body of rules and move them to the preamble statement? Is that okay with everybody? Because that's huge progress right there. I mean, we're boiling this down so far to 4 points. All right, there are more. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more for us to consider. Just take them in order. As someone trained in ethics, this one really bothers me. I don't like this one at all. Some of you are going to say, what? That's the best one.
I really love this one. I'm ready.
Seek to find and use the most equitable, efficient, effective, and economic means for accomplishing town business. Why would I hate that? I mean, who doesn't like efficiency, effectiveness, and economy? Although, I'm not sure if efficient and economical are redundant, but equitable is a new word. The reason I don't like it is because you can't always do all of those things at the same time. Sometimes the most equitable solution requires the use of resources in less efficient ways. Sometimes to be maximally effective, you definitely can't be very efficient. Some jobs take more resources than others. Are we always seeking the most economical way, or do we need to balance saving money against effectively delivering resources? I mean, if you wanted to be maximally economical and efficient, you would close down all of town government and privatize all of it. It'd be efficient, money-wise, be economical, but it might really suck. So the reason I don't like number 5 is not because the ideas are difficult, but because it doesn't give me any guidance. I don't know if equity is more important than effectiveness, which is more important than efficiency or being economic. So maybe it's just getting rid of the word most. But if what you're saying is when we make decisions, we will weigh the values of equity, efficiency, and effectiveness, does that guide you?
Can we just take those out and put the word responsible in there?
We could. I mean, equity might also be redundant with avoiding discrimination. I mean, how are you equitable? You don't discriminate. So you're suggesting that we would maybe have a plank that just says what? We
seek to find and use the most reasonable, the most reasonable, or something like that, means for conducting and accomplishing town meeting.
But we'll get there.
I got to draw my age in the cemetery.
What do other people think? I mean, you could leave all those words in there and just say that when engaging in city business, we seek to balance the values of equity and efficiency and.
I believe the original thought of this was about being responsible users of taxpayer dollars. Am I correct, Mr. Watts and Mr. Higginbotham? I feel like this was all about kind of the being responsible to the taxpayers.
Yeah.
No?
I agree with you.
Well, then we should say that more straightforwardly.
Right. That's what I was getting at. Should it just be being mindful of the taxpayers' money? Responsible use.
So this brings back in some of the stuff that's in the preamble, but in a more concrete way, so that something along the lines of, we recognize that the resources at our disposal are held in public trust and must be used. And what do we want to say? We want to be responsible stewards of, must be used on the basis of a reasonable...
In a responsible manner.
In a responsible manner. Can we, what do we think? We recognize.
We remember that all resources derive from the citizens, and it is to the citizens in which we are responsible for our financial decisions. I don't know.
What's the problem with how it is written?
The way it's written is it just doesn't tell me what to do, because equity might conflict with efficiency. So if you're telling me I'm always supposed to be equitable and I'm always supposed to be efficient, I don't know what to do if I can't do both. Sometimes the fairest thing in the world requires some extra resources, so it's not going to be the most efficient. But you might want to do it anyway because it's the right thing to do. I mean, saving money is great, especially if it's fungible, if you can then leverage it to do something else. But being efficient is not intrinsically valuable for its own sake. Efficiency is useful because it helps you get done the kinds of things you want to do. So I'm just at a loss as to, if I were on council and I read this, I don't know that it would help me make any decision. Whereas what Sarah just said might. If the discussion is that I have to recognize that as a council member, the resources at my disposal are held in public trust and must be used based on a reasonable assessment of advancing the common welfare, or so, something like that.
So I have so far, we remember that all resources derive from the citizens, and we hold a public responsibility to use those resources carefully and responsibly.
Ooh, yeah, responsible, then, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
You like that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah, go for it.
Will you write that, or are y'all good?
Well, I want to put it on the wall.
Oh, okay.
What
to get a little more water while you put that on the wall.
We remember that all resources derived from the citizens and we hold a public responsibility to use those resources carefully and responsibly. And I don't know if you like using responsibility and then responsibly again, but that was what I came up with at the moment.
Yeah, what is a public responsibility?
It's a responsibility back to the public. You're accountable. It should be an accountability. We hold a public accountability because you're accountable to the citizens.
I mean, you could. I hear what you're saying. It's not a public responsibility, it's my responsibility. So it's my responsibility to the public.
To the public, right.
So citizens, and we hold a responsibility to use those resources carefully and responsibly for the public good. Right?
Or we have an accountability, if you like that better.
Well, I think Mike's concern just is that by putting the word public there, it made it sound like the responsibility belongs to the
right.
public. And it's not. The responsibility belongs to me, but it's a responsibility to the public. Yeah, okay. So I think we just want to move public towards the end. We hold a responsibility to use those resources carefully and responsibility for the public good, or to advance the public interest, or you can play with that later, for the public good. All right. You. We're making progress. We're almost there. We're almost there. I'm going to leave the hardest ones to the end. So maybe is this one easy? I didn't think about it when I prepared this, but now I'm starting to wonder. This was going to be on the revised list on the left-hand wall, but now I'm wondering if it's actually redundant. Well, maybe not. Number 10.
You skipped number 8.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Where's 8? Yeah, I still have 8.
Oh,
was just reading that, and I think that's covered in number two.
That's what I was wondering. Is that a FOIA issue?
It's a COIA issue.
It's a COIA issue. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah, it's more of a COIA issue.
And then number one takes care of the two.
I mean, this is basically a anti-insider training.
Right,
that you're not going to use your position of power for personal gain. I think you're right. I think that's COIA.
Yeah.
So do we even need number 10?
No.
So 10 goes bye-bye. Save that one for the end. We save those two for the end because they fit together. So now we're going to go to 8 and 15. Make no private promises of any kind which purport to bind performance of public duty. And ensure when responding to the media that a clear distinction is made between personal opinion or belief and a decision made by the council. I group these two together, I could be wrong about this, but I group these two together because I think both of them speak to, and maybe we've got some of it covered under number four here now, but I think there's enough new there, we probably need another statement. That you will never purport to represent council if you're not speaking on behalf of council. So when I was on council, if I ever went to a meeting or anything, first of all, I avoided a lot because I didn't want to be misunderstood. And I didn't want people thinking that I represented council when I did something. But in situations where something mattered to me and I wanted to speak to an issue, I explicitly would say, I'm speaking now as a private citizen, this is my personal view, I am in no way representing council. You all have, whether you like it or not, a lot of power. Let me just tell you a quick story. The day I got elected mayor for the first time was the day of the derecho. Okay? People didn't even know I was mayor because everyone's power was out. No one could watch TV. So I get sworn in. And I'm running around town, it's hot, sweating, trying to make sure do we have water at this station and what are we doing over there? And I'm getting phone calls like crazy as now the mayor, right? I got a phone call from AEP. And they said, Mike, you became the mayor, right? Yeah, I just got voted in, an hour ago. Well, I need to tell you, we are trying to get power lines back up. And we're bringing spools of big copper wire and staging them. We're putting them on the ground near where we're going to have to string them up, and then we're going down the street and we're dropping another. By the time we get back, it's gone. Someone's stealing all the copper. I guess it has good salvage value. Not understanding yet what it meant to be mayor, I called the police. I can't remember who was the chief or if it was a division head or whatever. And I said, quite honestly, I'm just calling to give you a heads up. I think you need to know that I got a call from AEP and they say that their lines are being stolen and it's slowing down the repairs, and I just want you to know that. Within a half an hour, I get a call from Kim Payne, the city manager, saying, Mike, did you instruct the police to take patrol personnel off of traffic direction duty to start an investigation into stolen copper wire? Because all the traffic lights were down. So cars, so we had cops out at the intersections doing traffic. All of a sudden they were gone. And when Kim said, well, where are all the police officers who were supposed to be directing traffic? They were told, oh, well, the mayor told us that we needed to start investigating theft. Mm. And I was like, holy crap, that is not what I meant. It's not, I did not give anyone directions. I was merely sharing information. And that's when Kim Payne told me, Mike, you need to understand. You might just be one member of council among seven, but you are the mayor. And that's going to carry with it power. And you're going to be interpreted in a certain way, whether you intended it or not. I learned that lesson that first day and carried it with me throughout all the rest of my time on council, basically recognizing I can't do anything that looks like council has made up its mind when I'm speaking as an individual. It takes 7 votes in Lynchburg. Well, it takes a majority of 7 votes to get anything done. So I should not make any promises. I should not appear to represent council when I don't. If I speak to an issue, I need to make a distinction between whether it's my personal opinion or I am speaking on behalf of council. I think 8 and 15 are very, very similar, and I think you should have a statement that merely says something to the effect of, Sarah's already typing, I will avoid even the appearance of speaking on behalf of the body when in fact I have no authority to do so. I mean, if council says, hey, Dwayne, I want you to go to VML and carry our water for us, then you are speaking on behalf of council and you get to do that. Otherwise, you shouldn't. So, do we want to include this somehow, 8 and 15? We do. Sarah's nodding her head. Jared, I think, nodded his head. So what's the wording we want to play with here? This will be now, what, number 6?
I don't know if this is right, but I have, we each represent ourselves, not the council. I will avoid the appearance of speaking on behalf of the body unless specifically tasked to do so.
I'm just saying, if I look deeper into number 8,
yeah,
I think it may also deal with, I'm not going to make any promises to a private citizen that I'm going to vote this way.
And then not.
And either then not or do, but you...
It doesn't matter. You shouldn't have...
You should make that promise.
You don't pre-decide before the public hearing. That was a very specific point.
Oh, you're putting emphasis on the word to bind performance.
Correct.
Oh, I understood that to be, I won't make any promises to bind the performance of council. You can't get hemmed in.
Yeah, like I'm going to vote for that. Thank you for your argument. I'm going to support it. Yeah, I'm going to vote for it. And whether you do or do not, you've still made the promise to the citizens, but you know that you definitely. So basically, that's saying you're not going to entertain any arguments that are going to be at the table. I think the wording will be cleaned up. But
do you really think it's wrong if the morning of the council meeting, my wife says to me, Mike, this is an important issue. Have you decided how to vote? I said, yeah. I mean, we'll hear the debate this afternoon, but I'm pretty sure I know how to vote. Really? What are you going to do? Well, I'm going to vote against it. Are you sure? Yeah, I promise I'm going to vote against it. Have I just done something wrong?
No, but I think it's like if we'll just play it here, Andre. You're a citizen, and you want something. You and I are friends, okay? And you want something for your car wash. And you pitch your thing, it's coming up on council that, you know, this something big is coming up and it's going to affect his car wash. And he's telling me all about it, and I sit there and go, I'm with you. You got my vote, no question.
Well, I understand how that could put you in an awkward situation if you change your mind later, but that's your problem. I mean, do you really think you're never allowed to say to a constituent, I agree with you and I plan to vote that way?
I think it depends on how you phrase it. It just could be problematic. That may just be me.
But it's also campaign promises. If I get on council, I promise I'm going to vote to lower taxes.
Right.
Well,
we don't tax, so you can't lower.
Well, I'm going to lower fees. How's that? I'm going to reduce fees.
I think it would be okay as long as it's not for personal gain.
Which is covered under
COIA. Which we've already got under the COIA.
But see, you put yourself in a bind, but that's your own problem because you make a promise to whoever that you agree with them, you vote that way, and then you hear the arguments and you decide, no, we better go this way, then you've just broken your promise, but that's on you.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's a rule of council or if that's just personal.
Yeah, and you don't vote for me. I'm not going to shine but 3-year tires when you come back.
Well, that's using your public position, you know, to have personal gain, right? I mean, yeah, you can't be coercive. Well, we're going to get the last two that we're going to do have to do with respect for each other. I've held 13 and 14 to the end because that has to do with how you all interact with each other. And I definitely agree with you. You don't want to be coercive with one another. You don't want to make threats. Question is, do you want to make promises? I hear you, Dwayne, and I think you might be unwise to make a promise that you might not be able to keep. But I'm not sure it should be considered a violation of your... I mean, it's
but
your
I
code.
I do think that was the heart of that one. Of number 8, I think that was the heart of that when it was done.
I know that was Rachel's intent.
Yeah, that was.
I'm getting what you're saying, but I'm wondering if it's covered now under like our new number 3. In other words, my job, or number 5, our new number 5. My job is to worry about the welfare of the public good. So I should never make a promise that's going to prevent me from actually thinking carefully about these options, the pros and the cons of the decision. So I'm getting what you're saying. I mean, what you're saying is you shouldn't prejudge an issue and make a promise that you feel you can't get out of now, which means you're not going to do 5. You're actually going to violate 5 because I already promised my wife I was going to vote that way. Now I'm screwed, right?
Well, I wouldn't consider the spouse thing. I'm talking about him. You
know, that could be my friend.
Yeah, well, that a friend of yours.
Over a beer. Yeah. I promised I'll vote that way. And then I don't.
He won't buy you a beer next time.
Right, he gets upset. I mean, yeah, and I shouldn't vote a certain way just so I can get free beer. In fact, you just should not take free beer.
Well, you forgot your promise because he bought you too many beers.
He bought me too many beers. That wasn't a problem.
I mean, when I was on council, if I was out and someone came over and said, "Hey, Mike, are you here at all? Let me buy you a drink." I get off council, you can buy me all the drinks I want, but I'm not accepting gifts from anybody. Well, close
right.
Family and friends, obviously, but then, you have to disclose this stuff on your annual forms. All right, what does the group think about 8 and 15? Do they need to be separate? Do they both need to be in there? Give me some language. We still have 2 more to get through before we're done. We have 15 minutes.
And do they like the one that about speaking as a whole? Was that good that represented that part?
I definitely think we need that.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think that covers 15.
Okay.
Right?
I think you need to make that distinction.
All right, so we want one for sure that speaks to I will not speak in any way that purports or gives the indication that I'm speaking for the body unless I've been authorized to do so. What's the language you have?
I have, we each represent ourselves, not council. I will avoid the appearance of speaking on behalf of the body unless specifically tasked to do so.
Keep going, because then I'm going to make a correction.
I knew you would.
Please. At least a suggestion.
Please.
This has got to be your document. So when
no, you're good.
You build the whole thing.
I'm just giving you thinking back at you.
Yeah, I like it. Please.
We each represent ourselves, not counsel. I will avoid the appearance of speaking on behalf of the body. Unless specifically tasked to do so.
I'm speaking.
On behalf of the body.
Unless
specifically tasked to do so.
Okay, what I don't like is represent ourselves. When you're speaking, you might be representing more than just your personal view. You might be representing what a group feels, right? So I'm not sure that I like, we each represent ourselves, not council. I think what we need to say is something like, when speaking individually, right? Something along those lines. We must avoid the appearance. I'm speaking on behalf of the body unless specifically tasked to do so. I'm just not sure that it's a question of representing ourselves. Jared, you haven't said anything for a little while. Help me out here. Do some words for me. The whole idea is none of us should be in a position where if someone hears us speak, they think that council has made a decision when in fact it has not yet done so.
Basically just keeping from our boy down, but then just putting that kind of challenge in front of
it. Oh, you could just start the sentence here? I will avoid the appearance of speaking on behalf of the body unless specifically tasked to do so.
Oh, that says it all.
It does.
Yeah, that's cleaner.
Sometimes less is much best. Well.
All right. I left the best for last. The hardest of two. Squishiest. We're gonna have to work hard to figure out the right words for the last two, 13 and 14. These cover a lot of ground, but they have to do with the spirit in which you interact with each other. And so they're very important. 13, seek to communicate fairly and equally with all other council members outside of formal meetings. Avoid excluding one or more council members from information shared with others while consistently maintaining adherence to the requirements of the Virginia Freedom of Information Act. We know we're going to dump the reference to FOIA because we've successfully put that in above. I understand the spirit of this and I like it. You're going to treat each other fairly. You're not going to play tricks on each other. You're not going to hide information in order to catch people in a snare. I get it. I like it. I don't like it because it implies that I have to say the same things to every other council member that I say to one of them. And that's unreasonable. You might pair off and have an identity of interest, and you might want to do some discussing and comparing of ideas. And we cannot have a rule of council that says if you have a conversation with one person, you have to have an identical conversation with everybody else. So the spirit is good, but I think it's too restricted. 14, never use a position of public trust to gain access to the public or the media for purposes of criticizing colleagues, staff, or citizens, impugning their integrity, or vilifying their personal beliefs. I like this, okay? I'm not sure if 13 and 14 are all basically on the same, it's all talking about the spirit in which you communicate. I'm not going to disparage individuals. I'm not going to treat people unfairly. I recognize that any information that the town manager has should be shared equally with all my colleagues. I cannot commit myself to always talking to everybody about everything. Right? There's too much strategizing that goes on. I can imagine. I'm going to call up Jared. I'm going to say, hey, Jared, you know, Andre's going to go a different way than us in this meeting. What are your arguments going to be? I'll tell you what my arguments are going to be. Let's piggyback off each other.
That's fair. There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's fair. What we should not do is, ooh, you got some dirt on Andre? Like, let's spring it on at the meeting. Okay? So you tell me if you think 13 and 14 can sort of be combined or if they have to stand separately, but both of them deal with the way you use your mouth.
I think they can be combined.
Mike, your hand went up.
I think the last word there, personal beliefs, you know, geez, to me, that's your religion. It should be personal opinion.
Ah, you don't like the word beliefs.
I don't like the word beliefs.
Okay, so you don't want to change that to opinions. All right, note taken. Note taken. Although I think you probably also don't want to be disparaging people's personal religions. But how often does that come up on counseling? I'm sorry, Dwayne.
Well, it doesn't have to be religion.
It doesn't.
My personal belief could be that I believe you don't belong on counseling.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. Beliefs, yeah. Beliefs, that's a pretty broad word. Even atheists have beliefs, even if they don't have religion.
Well, your opinion is your belief. I mean, it's,
yeah, we just have to decide which word sort
which
of
word,
rings
right.
better.
Word sound.
Yeah, it could go either way.
I think they both can be combined, because they're both basically doing the same thing, just phrased different. So I think we could probably put them together and take some out of 14 and some out of 13.
I think 13 you can seek to communicate fairly with all of the council members outside of formal meetings, and then jump right into the 14.
Seek to communicate fairly and equally with all other council members outside of formal meetings, and avoid public criticism. I think it's really important that something like this get in there.
So what I put to try to combine what folks said previously and today is seek to communicate openly and fairly with other council members, assume good intent from each other, and speak respectfully to and about each other.
Ooh. Nice.
I like it.
I like
yeah,
it.
Nice.
Mike, you like it or not?
Too nice.
Too nice.
Too nice.
You want to be able to attack someone at the time. He's right.
Well, that's why I said respectfully and not kindly, because I originally, in my happy sunshiny way, Mr. Driscoll did write speak kindly, and then I was like, that's probably not the right vibe, it's probably respectfully, because you can respectfully disagree, but it's hard to kindly disagree.
And your language about assuming best intentions, that's the don't
impugn people.
Don't vilify.
Right, because the point you made previously is very true with this council. I don't think anybody here thinks that other people aren't trying to do the best as they see it. I mean, I think everybody here can recognize that I don't necessarily agree with the decision this one or that one made, but I believe that they think they were trying to do what was right. I mean, and that's the assumed good intent.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that 100%.
Assume good intent, you know, that they're doing what they think is right. I think they're wrong, but they did what they thought was right.
Doing it. For the right reasons, they might be misguided,
yeah.
but they're not bad people.
Right.
Right.
All right. I want you to write this one down.
Okay.
Seek to communicate openly and fairly.
Openly. You're allowed to have private conversations. Well. If I want to compare notes with Mike and not with Ken, I can have a close conversation with him.
I'm just seeking to be open in general. I didn't see that as that being the equal thing. I saw that as being, I'm just being open instead of closed.
I think it was being candid to whoever you were talking to, being straight. Like, Mike, you know, I'm not picking on you, but I'm just saying, Mike, that last thing you said just sucked. It was stupid. You know,
that's not the way you should say it.
You know, me and him on the phone, if it was just me and him standing face to face, I may say it that way.
Well,
come on, explain to me. But I mean, that's just us talking. That's an open conversation. Because then he can go, well, you're full of shit. Just keep going. You know?
And we've had that specific conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure of it.
All right, keep
writing it, okay. and then go.
Speak to communicate openly and fairly with other council members, comma. Assume good intent from each other, comma.
Assume
good intent.
So you know I love you when I call it a stupid decision, okay? It's all in love, baby.
You know what? You don't even have to love it. Just respect it.
He won't do it publicly.
From each other.
We're almost done, folks. We did not take a break here, so we've been going 2 hours straight, so just hang in there. We're almost done.
And speak respectfully to and about each other. I think we should ask Mr. Martin to wordsmith it. He's already shown he's really good at this.
We will definitely do that, but one of the things is going to be, do you want to expand this to speaking respectfully, not just about each other, but also staff and citizens? Speaking respectfully about
to and about
members,
each other,
staff members, and the general public. Fellow council members, staff members, and members of the general public. I'm wondering if you want to replace the word openly with something like honest or candid, or I'm just worried that open makes it sound like all conversations now are privy, you know, that the public has a right to hear all conversations, which is not true under FOIA.
See, I see that now.
What if it was seek to communicate productively?
Mm. Productively and fairly? Or just productively? Council, this is going to be your document.
Yeah.
You need to decide.
I'd say fairly. Just leave fairly.
And communicate fairly with other council members, and then that gives you the opportunity whether you want to talk to one or call everybody on the phone.
Well, then what does fairly mean?
It's your interpretation.
Well, that's not
fair. It can't be better than that.
I mean, what does it mean? We can't legislate jerkiness, right? Like, don't be an ass. What do we tell you? Seek to communicate. I mean, you could say honestly. Honest is actually definable.
What about seek communication?
I'm sorry?
Seek communication with other council members.
Is honest and fair?
Seek honest communication.
Honest communication.
Honestly and fairly with other council members and staff?
Yeah.
Or no?
Sure.
Yeah.
Could you read that, please?
Seek to communicate honestly and fairly with other council members and staff. Assume good intent from each other. And speak respectfully.
Yeah, sorry. I put respectively.
Respectfully to and about fellow council members, staff, and the general public.
Yeah, I like that.
That's good.
I think that would cover someone standing up in a meeting and saying, "You're an idiot."
Yeah.
I think we would say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! You're not communicating in a respectful way." Right?
We do that after the meeting.
We do it after the meeting.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Although, frankly, this also would cover, you shouldn't troll each other.
No, you shouldn't troll each other, but you can be honest with each other.
You can be honest with each other, but this would also cover, you shouldn't be writing nasty things on your Facebook page about each other, right? I mean,
right.
I think that's all in here, is to avoid disparaging your fellows.
Well,
on a personal level. You can always say, I disagreed with their vote. But to say I disagreed with their vote because they're an idiot.
Oh, no.
Oh. And the same would be true with staff, right? I mean, I tell you, when I was on council, we had a council member who periodically would actually insult staff to their face in a public meeting.
Wow.
And even if the staff person did something wrong, it did not belong.
It's not the place.
As a public dress down from a council member when the staff person doesn't even report directly to council. Now, Sarah, you gotta quit. you have a preamble that you have in your computer that we did not write down.
We recognize the honor and privilege of public office, and we commit ourselves to upholding the public trust in our work as responsible stewards of our home, the town of Amherst, and hereby adopt these principles.
One, we uphold all federal, state, and local laws adhering to the charter of the town of Amherst, all the while respecting the individual rights of our citizens. Two, we are committed to upholding our special obligations under FOIA and COIA. Oh, our special obligations as elected officials under FOIA and COIA. Three, we recognize the needs of all citizens, avoiding discrimination.
You can't remember.
Through dispensing of special favors or unfair privileges when making decisions based on the entirety of the town of Amherst interest. Four, we have to add we. We respect the will of council as a body by accepting the decisions of council and following the rules of procedure. Five, we remember that all resources derive from the citizens and we hold a responsibility to use those resources carefully and responsibly for the public good. Six, should be we. We will avoid the appearance of speaking on behalf of the body unless specifically tasked to do so. Seven, do we want to say seek to, or do we want to say we communicate, or we will communicate?
We communicate.
We will?
We communicate.
We communicate. We communicate honestly and fairly with other council members and staff, assume good intent from each other, and speak respectfully to and about fellow council members, staff, and the general public. Okay.
Well, we can go back to we seek to communicate. That's fine.
Or either we shall communicate.
Or we will, we shall.
Or we will, or we shall.
Yeah, you have to decide how you like a will or a shall. Put it in parentheses so we can figure it out. All right. I'm at the end of my time with you. You guys have other work to do. So let me just ask. If we have the preamble, as Sarah read, and these seven principles, does this help you when you, at any moment, you're interacting with a fellow council member or whatever, or a constituent, and you have to remind yourself what your duties are? Because of the role you play, which is a special role, do these seven capture what we want, and is anything missing? Because I think you had an idea, Sarah, maybe of something that wasn't even in here that you wanted to add, or did we capture it as we went?
Engaging citizens was the one thing we had talked about that we didn't necessarily go back and capture.
Which is a... You mean a duty to engage the
right,
citizenry?
Right, do more than just, you know, have open meetings as we're required to by law, but also to engage citizens actively in discussion and
decision-making. Was that a new standalone, or did that belong under something we've got?
That, I don't know. I just made a note because as we were getting rid of things and editing, that was something that was kind of contained in one of the parts of the ones that we didn't bring forward. So I just wrote it as a separate note. And I think you've got part of it when you talk about how you treat citizens and you seek to communicate. If you're seeking to communicate honestly and fairly, including citizens in that, I mean, I feel like we might, you know. I mean, we could open up number
seven. How about if we just, number seven. We shall communicate honestly and fairly with other council members, staff, and citizens, assume good...
I think you could just say, comma, assuming good intent and speaking respectfully to all.
assuming good intent. And what?
Speaking respectfully to all.
And speaking respectfully to all. Use your time. I think I'm going to take a picture of this. You've got the notes. I will forever, in my computer, I'll say written by.
She cannot.
All right. I got to let you go. I know you have some work to do. We've gone to 3:00, a little bit past. I hope it's been useful. The goal today was to get here, but also to use this as an opportunity for you as a council to compare notes and actually understand a little bit more about how each of you is thinking about these things. I'm very impressed and pleased with the level of consensus that we've been able to develop. It'd be very interesting to hear what your absent council member thinks of this, but I hope it's been productive. And I'm gonna stop there, Sarah. I'll turn it back over to you. Let me take a quick picture of these notes on the wall in case you lose your...
Mike, I want to speak on behalf of council after our lunchtime discussion. We are really glad you were here. You sparked an interest, and you have done more to make us all communicate in meetings like this, and we really appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you.
And
thank
the you, expertise you had.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad to hear that you are happy with it, and if I can ever be of service again in the future, let me know. But I think you guys are off to a really great start. I know you might have some little bits and things that happen here and there, but I'm very impressed with the degree to which you respect staff, and I think you respect each other. So it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have a copy of your PowerPoint?
Yes, I will email a copy to Sarah, and maybe, Sarah, you can type this up and push it out to everybody all at one time.
Yes, sir. Yes, right. That is what we'll do. If we could just take a couple minutes, if you want to go to the bathroom, get a drink, just stretch your legs, all of that, and then reconvene. And what I want to do from there is just make sure kind of we talked a little bit about the work session schedule and some of the upcoming things we're going to be doing logistically. So we're going to just take a few minutes and then we'll come back.